Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Welcome back to the third hour of Up North News for Tuesday, October 18th. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Dr. Kristen Lyerly will be back with us in a sec. And also this hour, author Ron Faola talks about his upcoming fourth book on Wisconsin supper clubs. But we've been having such a good time with guests, we really haven't had much time to talk about other things that have been in the news that we feel are worth passing along, including one that's getting some national attention, that Senator Ron Johnson's campaign has retained the Wisconsin-based law firm that represented former President Donald Trump in his failed effort to overturn the election in Wisconsin. The Journal Sentinel version of the story coming from Bill Glauber, Dan Bice, and Molly Beck. The firm is headed by attorney James Troupas, who was allegedly at the center of the plot to have so-called fake electors recognized. And it was, you know, Ron Johnson's office that had received the fraudulent ballots from the fake electors. And, you know, since that time, Johnson's campaign has made about $20,000 in payments to the Troupas firm since July. NBC News was first to report the payments, according to the Journal Sentinel story here. And it's not that tough of a climb for people to connect some of the dots as far as what they see. What is the significance of Ron Johnson's campaign paying this law firm that was involved in the plot for fake electors? So don't think that we've heard the last of that one yet. Over on the governor's race, Governor Evers has released three new TV ads. I'm going to tell you about one of them that, you know, knocks Tim Michaels for all of those attacks about people being released on parole during Evers' time in office. The spot opens with the narrator saying, "Tim Michaels wants to scare you with lies," as the ad shows a cluster of TV screens running these ads attacking the governor. The narrator, according to the WisPolitics story here, says the truth is that independent fact checkers gave Michaels' parole attacks a pants on fire rating, finding the governor doesn't allow any release of criminals. And the narrator added that Evers has increased police funding and is working to invest in high crime areas through job training, after school programs, and mental health. Kristen, I don't know if you heard much of the show yesterday. If you watched the, the debate between Michaels and Evers, especially his bite about how Michaels is going to talk to the bad guys on election night and in his inaugural address, saying there's a new sheriff in town, and all I can imagine is just Michaels shooting imaginary finger guns, going pew pew, because that's what he thinks is going to do it. Is that what his idea of leadership is? Or is it just using crime to win elections and then not really doing much of anything once you're in office?
Easy answer, B. I'm going to go with B on that one, Pat. It's just using the words. And his stance on abortion is a perfect example of that. He came out saying, "I am pro-life. I am not a flip-flopper. I will not allow exceptions for rape and incest." And then as soon as he realized that that was not politically popular, he flip-flopped. So he will say anything that he has to in order to get elected. Integrity is not high on Tim Michaels' list of characteristics.
And I will say that I'm still rather surprised at how, I guess I would say, undercovered some of his remarks have been. The one about that Governor Evers favors allowing a doctor to murder baby after birth, his dismissal of domestic abuse victims by saying that red flag laws would be, you know, would be misused by a disgruntled ex. And of course, you know, the one that some people are talking about, and that's saying, you know, Wisconsin is full of lazy people, even though we have more people working than ever before.
That one just is weird to me, because you would think that he would expect some of these lazy people to vote for him. But I think he is just saying what he is told to say. He is just a speaker. He is campaigning. He's just giving information that is not necessarily true. He can say anything that he wants, and he is. Whereas Governor Evers is a true leader, and he is actually doing things. He's spending money on police instead of defunding them the way that the Republican legislature has been doing for the past decade through cutting shared revenue. If you look under the covers, if you actually follow up on some of the things that Michaels is saying, there's nothing, there's no substance there.
And then on the climate crisis, where he says, well, you know, there's a lot of discussion about that, but the temperature has always fluctuated. We can't say it happened because of man's actions in the last 100 years. Actually, yes, we can. That's what scientists do.
But they don't believe in science. And Ron Johnson said this during his debate as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe in climate change. I believe the climate has been changing forever. The question is, can we do something about it? Yes, right. We can. Yes, this is where we talk to the experts, and we have to invest in the experts and believe the experts.
And this is where, again, you have people who in Michaels and Johnson and Trump, who, what did they always say while running? We're going to surround ourselves by the smart people. We're going to get the smart people in the room, meaning business people. They think that people involved in public service, as Tim Michaels said during the debate, don't do anything real, you know, again, because he couldn't find enough people to insult during the debate. When the fact of the matter is, there are loads of smart people in science and in public service who understand these things, who have been trying to raise the alarm, and a certain class of politicians would just rather stay in the pockets of, you know, the fossil fuel industry than actually do the right thing for Wisconsin and, you know, for the planet. When we come back from the break, author Ron Faiola talks about his books about Wisconsin Supper Club history and more right after this break. You're up north. Kristen, I can already smell the steaks coming from the kitchen and the relish tray coming to your table. And I'm already figuring out how this first old fashioned disappeared so quickly. It's time for the second one. It must be time for us to talk about supper clubs.
I'm so excited to be joined by Ron Faiola. And I won't do the intro because I'll hand it back to Pat, but this is not my gig. Usually I'm a doctor, but Pat allowed me to be here today with you, Ron, because I am a supper club enthusiast. So I'm like a fangirl. Thank you for being here.
Yes.
I thank see you, your Ron. Book Welcome. Back there. So yeah.
Yep. I've been showing these off for a couple of days now. Cool. My last winter, we went to Cancun for a vacation. And while most people, their beach read is one of these little tiny paperback books, there's probably still sand in here, you know, because I could not stop going through this point, telling my wife, Sharon, like, look at that. We should go to this one. And oh, we never get to go to this one because it's gone now. And it's just, it's amazing. It's historic and it's changing, of course, with the times. And we'll try to get into a lot of that during this hour, but we would be remiss if we didn't start at the beginning, which I know you've been asked 1,000 times, but forgive 1,001. But what prompted you 10 years ago or more now to kind of bring these supper clubs, current and past, to life in book form?
It started with a documentary I made about Wisconsin supper clubs. I realized there was nothing out there about supper clubs. And so I just picked up my camera and took off. I did, I think, 14 supper clubs at the time in the summer of 2010. And there was, once the movie came out, it was on public television. And there was an article in the Chicago Tribune. And my publisher, or soon to be publisher, saw it and sent me an email and said, how would you like to do a book? Mm-hmm. So I found myself back on the road in 2012, which was great.
Oh, and just amazing, just additions that they are. And we'll get into some more details about the various elements of the book. Let's spend a very brief moment on the history of the Supper Club. And I don't know that there's a definitive history, but you go through, you know, great detail in explaining that, you know, we're talking about the ways that we will eat together as a community. And so how do you set that up? How do you explain that to the reader in explaining the definition of supper club?
Well, I've never been able to come up with a real concise, you know, a supper club is this. I know what it's not, but, and also there was a legend that supper clubs were started in Beverly Hills, California. And in my last book, which is a history of supper clubs, I debunked that. Turns out supper clubs were started in London, England, in the 1880s. And it's hard to think that, you know, here Wisconsin has so many supper clubs and they started so far away, but that's how it happened. But supper clubs here in Wisconsin are family owned. Their families often live on the premises. They everything's made from scratch. It's a community gathering place. They have probably unusual hours, not open 7 days a week, maybe closed seasonally. When they go hunting, they put a sign on the door and said, we're off, you know, for a week and stuff like that. So it's the
restaurant example of a true mom and pop business, the way, you know, a unique to that owner, that family, that individual, it's their mom and pop way of, you know, feeding a community of customers.
That's right. And, you know, the bar, the one thing, you know, supper clubs, the bar is separate from the dining room. People at the bar, you know, they get to talking about their favorite fish fry or something, and everybody joins in. It's a real friendly atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I've always seen people just enjoying chatting with each other, whether they know them or not, you know, so you make new friends.
Yeah, I grew up, I grew up in Kaukauna, Wisconsin. Our supper club was called the Highland House, which is not a supper club anymore, but we would go there every Friday night. My parents would take us down there. That was the only restaurant that we went to. And they would sit at the bar and we would have the same waitress and they would meet their friends. The people who owned the restaurant sponsored my baseball team. This was so much more than going out for food. This was your social life. These were the people you hung out with and the people you cared about and the people who elevated your community.
That's right. I've met mayors at the supper club, you know, mayors of the town and local leaders. And it's an important place. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wonder how much of it is wrapped up in labor in the workforce. I mean, you talk about how like in New York City, for example, you had, you know, people working in the theater district, of course, worked crazy hours and they were looking for a place to eat afterwards. And here you have people that want to gather at the end of a work day. And again, they don't want to do the cooking, but you have this community set up. Not because a lot of people necessarily, you know, don't want to cook at home, but they've been working and they're ready for somebody else to do the cooking and they're ready to, you know, essentially share that space with other people around them.
That's right. And, you know, the people that work there like to see their regular customers and it's a social thing for them as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, the end of the work week, you go in for a Friday fish fry with the whole family and it's relatively cheap, you know, a way to fill up everybody with some good food, some fish and potatoes.
There's kind of a fun cadence to eating at a supper club too. It's not like a restaurant where you go in and put your name in and you talk to the hostess and maybe they put your name on a list or maybe they give you a number or maybe they just recognize you. It's got this very personal kind of feel to it, depending on where you go. So if you're a stranger who just walks off the street, you might need a little education in order to know how to dine at that particular supper club.
That's right. Because a lot of supper clubs, you order at the bar. And people don't understand that. They think, oh, this is a big scam that, you know, you're making me buy drinks. But that's just how it works out. It helps the kitchen and the staff, the serving staff, keep things at an even keel versus just sitting people down as soon as they show up. And so you'll see a server come out with an ordering pad and customers are there with the menus and they're, you know, picking what they're going to have. So.
The supper club was unique compared to this day and age where, you know, somebody who was not aware of supper clubs would say, well, wait, you can make a steak at home. You can have fish at home. You can have ribs at home. But, you know, home cooking has changed over the years. And, you really wanted to go out if you wanted a really good steak dinner. We didn't have the wide array of supermarkets, you know, that we do in this day and age. So just the meal itself was something sometimes very different than what you would get at home. And that's part of what made it special.
You know, yeah, that's a true point. And if you cook a steak at home, it's different because the grill that cooks your steak is seasoned with lots of other steaks that it's cooked. So that flavoring, that char that you get is from years of built-in cooking. And then you're not going to cook a huge prime rib at home, probably. So it's a lot easier to go out and get a slab at the supper club.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it just, you can talk about the supper clubs themselves, but you can get into all these niche areas like, you know, why do steaks taste different? What is it about, you know, the ones that have such a great reputation? What are they doing differently? There's the niche topic of the fish fry itself. How did that get to be a thing, and how has that changed over time? And I wonder, Ron, if sometimes you had to almost remember to kind of stay in a lane here and not get too far afield in all the other different ways you could talk about the different elements of the supper club experience.
Yeah, that's right. It's, you know, the thing about supper clubs are the personality of the owners. Mm-hmm. So they may have a kind of similar menu across the state of steaks, seafood, and so on, fish fry. But the personality of the supper club is the personality of the owners. And they're often right there, waiting on you or you know, behind the bar or behind the grill. So everything that you experience there is what they are hoping you will enjoy. And so it's whether it's a special way of cooking something or their secret batter recipe or, you know, whatever they do, you know, it's always special.
Ron Faiola joins us now, author of several books on Wisconsin supper clubs. The first one came out about 10 years ago, and we mentioned earlier that you're working on a fourth one to come out about a year from now or so. And so in some ways, will it be a bit of an update on the writings that you've done already?
Right. So it'll be, I revisit, I think, 24 of the 50 that were in the first book. Unfortunately, 9 are closed through various things. And I added 15 more new places, so or new to the book. So that was a lot of fun this summer. And the weather was perfect for traveling this summer around Wisconsin. So I was really lucky. And I'm going to do my last two this week. And then I just turn everything in and wait. We do the editing, and then the book will come out in about a year. So I'm really excited.
Are we going to get to share some stories about supper club experiences? Because I have so many fun stories. Like, I'll just share a short one.
Go ahead.
We went to the Sky Club in, where is it? Plover.
Plover.
Yes. One of the originals, first salad bar. We sat at the bar and we had our book with us. We bring the book and then we have a conversation with whoever is there. And we got to talk with one of the owners who gave us the full history. It wasn't a super busy night. Gave us the full history. He signed our book. We bought a supper club enthusiast cone so that we could sit at our table and put the cone on the table so other people would know that we were enthusiasts and that we would enjoy a conversation. It was not about the meal. The meal was amazing, but it was not about the meal. It was about building community, being in a place with other people, appreciating the same thing, recognizing the goodness of locally sourced food and company. It was so much more than just a restaurant.
That's right. The Sky Club is located in the heart of where all the potatoes are grown, and the McCain Company. You come in and it smells like French fries because they're always doing their fries. So they get local potatoes, they get, you know, local produce, and Eric and Patrick are the owners, and long history of being there. I was there, I think in July or August, and it was great to come back, come back and see them again. So, it's a first salad bar, you know, ever installed. So
we're gonna talk a bit about the salad bars, the drinks that you'll find there, and more with Ron Faola, author of three incredible books about Wisconsin supper clubs and supper club history. We'll take a break and continue that conversation, and then you can learn more about our own coverage of supper clubs over the past couple of years here at UpNorthNewsWI.com. We'll be right back.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, UpNorthNewsWI.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
And I've also got Kristen Lyerly with me as we hang out virtually at supper clubs across Wisconsin with Ron Faola, who has authored books including Wisconsin Supper Clubs, Another Round, The Wisconsin Supper Club Story, and Illustrated History with Relish. And we are just really enjoying kind of a trip down memory lane for the places we didn't get to go to, as well as the places that we still get to enjoy. And Ron, I guess I want to start first by saying that with supper clubs, you get what I got out of the book. One of many things is there's kind of this division between the ones that are kind of, you know, very, very local. They're, you know, much more rural. They're still nice, don't get me wrong, but compare that to what the ones that you talk about in like the Milwaukee area, especially, where they're intentionally trying to bring up traffic from Chicago. And I mean, the architecture is so modern for its time, and you know, these big circular or horseshoe shaped bars and everything like that, and even bringing in, you know, celebrity entertainment at times. That, you know, supper club encompasses a big genre, but it covers everything from, you know, local great places to eat to places that were, you know, trying to be big city entertainment.
Yeah, well, entertainment, dining and dancing was a huge thing back in the heyday of supper clubs. And it, unfortunately, we don't see so much of the entertainment or live music now as we used to. And people don't really dance like they used to. But it was the thing. And yeah, in Milwaukee, the Holiday House brought in top name entertainment that would normally be seen in Las Vegas or Hollywood or New York. And so it's kind of a lost part of the supper club element, but there are the places like the Butterfly Club in Beloit still has a band in the lounge and people can dance. They have a dance floor. The Stakeout here in Greendale, where I live, they have Al White plays every weekend, and he's got his keyboards and they have a little dance floor if you're so inclined. And it's just nice to have a little live entertainment instead of just a soundtrack, you know, a radio or whatever, you know, you're playing in the background. So
we visited the Hobnob in Racine, and it was like walking back in time to the glamorous 50s. It is beautifully preserved. It's at a great location. The food was outstanding. An incredible experience.
And yeah, it goes for, I'm sorry, go ahead, Ron.
I was going to say that the Hobnob is unique among Wisconsin supper clubs. They don't have the, what I call the Holy Trinity of supper club decor: taxidermy, dark wood paneling, and twinkly lights.
They replaced it with neon.
Well, the Hobnob, yeah, they have colorful vases and great artwork on the walls. They have tapestries, and so it's a little different than the usual. So
I was going to mention the architecture at Ishnala in Wisconsin Dells, which, you know, we went to for the first time a couple of weeks ago. My wife commented that it was very reminiscent of House on the Rock, in that you're building right into the rocky landscape. So there's all manner of short little staircases and so many different levels, because you're not building on a flat foundation. You're building right into the land. And I'm sure there's other places like that as well.
Yeah. You know, Ishnala too, it started off as a trading post that the original log cabin is still there. You can see the walls of it. They just kind of kept building around it. And it was the Hoffman brothers that did the major renovation, where they put the decks and the huge bar and the flagstone and have the trees growing through the dining room, which is very unique, you know, to have eight trees.
I think we talked about it after looking in the book, and we realized we'd passed by a sign on I-94, you know, going through the Dells for years and years without really knowing where it was. So then when we finally got off the interstate, you know, a couple of weeks back and went by, we were amazed that that sign is actually the driveway. That's actually where you go in. You wind through the woods for a little bit, but we just thought it was like a billboard, but it's really right there where you see the sign on I-94.
That's right. Yeah. To guide people in. And they use that curvy road in the movie Public Enemies.
Johnny Depp. Yeah.
Right. Portray Wisconsin's back roads. And now it's, I don't know if you've been there recently, but they have, like, you remember the Burma Shave signs that so Bob put up these signs as you drive in that keep telling you how great their old fashions are and all that stuff. And I love it. It's just really nice. It's like just telling you what you're going to experience, you know, as you're driving in. So
it whets your appetite for what's to come. Speaking of old fashions, right, Let's talk about drinks for a minute here, because if you, for folks, when they go through the book, they'll notice that some places, you know, the drink menus get fancier. They add more to it. And I guess let me ask from the drink beverage standpoint, something that started as a supper club, but also became a place where bartenders and owners could get really creative with their beverages. What was that something to, I mean, was it pretty organic, or was it to keep up with trends elsewhere in the country to have more than, you know, a shot and a beer?
Yeah. You know, I think right now it's trends. You know, back in the 90s, it was vodka, flavored vodkas, and they were making all these types of vodka drinks. Now bourbon has become huge. And there's places that, supper clubs that have tried to collect as many rare bourbon bottles. The Joneses in Prairie du Chien does that. And they've got this massive collection. And so if you're a bourbon lover, now's a good time to experiment with some of the offerings and other unique drinks. The standard is the brandy old fashioned, but you know, like I say, people are drinking bourbon old fashions. They're even drinking Southern Comfort old fashions and then the martinis and all the other drinks that come in. And that's a big thing too, is having sweet and savory martinis, you know, a list of 10 or, you know, whatever. So.
Pat, we can't hear you.
Sorry, I went to go pull my curtain shut here because the sun was starting to come right in here and I hit it on mute for a second. Let me ask about coming into the present day. Now, right now, when you walk into a supper club, a lot of times it is like going into a time capsule. And that's a wonderful thing. You're going back to the 50s or to the 60s or whatnot. So it begs this question. Can you create a contemporary supper club, or without that sense of tradition, are you just opening another restaurant?
So you're saying if somebody tries to open one now and it's...
Yeah, can you open a supper club now and get that supper club feeling? And if so, what is it that you have to do, or must something be old and evoke an older time in order for people to go, oh yeah, that's a supper club, that you can't have something that's a bit more contemporary in its design, shall we say?
Yeah, unfortunately, it is happening. And what they're doing is they're getting these retro images, and some of them go overboard, and I call it kind of a Disneyization of the supper club, where it's all about Instagram and, you know, what people are going to post on social media. If people like that, there's, you know, I don't have a problem with it, but all the older places, I know right now, there's a couple that's going to reopen a supper club that's been closed for quite a while. And it'll be interesting to see what they're going to do to the place. So yeah, it's, do you try to put, I think the lack of TVs is a good thing.
Yes.
As long as they don't put a whole bunch of TVs in the dining room. It's one thing to have one in the bar if, in case a game is on or something you want to watch, but let's not do what the chains do. Just have TVs on that nobody's really watching. So
we all have a TV in our pocket, so we don't need those, right?
That's so true too.
Yeah. So I'm thinking of the other end of the spectrum, and I want to give a shout out to one of my favorite supper clubs in Charlesburg, which is just outside of Chilton. It's called Repke's.
Right.
This is a place where my family has gone for generations. They don't even think about it. They just go to Repke's. They know all the Repke's. This family has owned this place for forever. We brought our book in there and I identified myself as a Sobel and I was immediately part of the family. They brought the book back and had everybody sign it, including the dishwasher. They were so pleased that we were there. It was just such a beautiful experience, but it's tough to keep a restaurant going in a little tiny town like Charlesburg, which has what, 5 houses and a church and a supper club.
Right.
And a lot of these supper clubs are located in places like that.
They're destinations. And you're not going to accidentally drive by, and say, oh, let's go to Repke's. And Repke's, yeah, they've been open since 69. But you mentioned something else that's been happening more and more. People taking their books to the supper clubs and having the owners or whoever is there sign their books. And then they'll get the menu or write down what they had. And that's a really big thing now. So they just don't sit on coffee tables anymore. People are taking them out. And at Rocky's in Stoddard, she's the owner, Janet Stern, she's been having people sign her book. So she has hundreds of signatures and well wishes from people from all around this Midwest and beyond. So
that's
so apparently
wonderful.
We've got to get Kristen, we've got to get you and Ron at the same place, because apparently that's a signature you're missing
in the book.
Ron, you are still on the road for this, working on your next book. We're kind of joking that, tough work. It is tough work actually when you're researching a book. And so when you get out and about, I would never dream of asking like your favorites or anything like that, but for all the travels that you've gone through, when you're on the road, knowing you're doing a supper club, what is it that you still enjoy most about being on the road, seeing all these places?
Well, just the travel. I like the back roads. I try to take those as much as possible. And just to see the countryside, and I don't get to see that enough. And then, arriving at the club and, I get to see everything. So I see their kitchens. I'm there before they open. So I see what they're doing to get the place together, and the staff, what they're talking about. And so you get to, see things that people don't get to see normally. And then, the food, I do get to try some of the food. I don't sit there and have, a huge meal at every time, because I'm doing a supper club every night. So I'd be dead if I kept.
Do you have one, and you do or don't have to identify it, but do you have something where you have it? And again, we're not expecting anybody to be chefs here, but it still amazes you that this particular place can make this particular thing so good.
Yeah. Because I do get to see what they're doing, I can appreciate it more. I'm not Guy Fieri, so I'm not like in the kitchen, and he's right. They're making it specifically for me, but I get to see the preparation and the grills and the broasters, and broasted chicken is a huge thing.
Oh, yes.
And I just went down to the broaster company in Beloit to visit them and ask them about their machines that are made here in Wisconsin that are in pretty much every supper club. And so I got some broasted chicken right from the source that day. So
That's good eating right there. Yeah, Ron Faola is working on his next Supper Club book, but get the first three by all means, and then start going on the road like Kristen has. I didn't even think about it as a roadmap, but that's the way to go. Ron, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for the visit today.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was definitely our pleasure. And we will be back to wrap up today's show right after this. You're Up North. All right, a little more behind the scenes than you probably care to know, but since we talked about earlier my crawling under the desk here to figure out how I've got all this wired up, we're going to rewire the Lake Wissota studio setup, because we're going to have the first ever reunion of the Wednesday hosts here with Kristen and Kirk Bangstead and me all here in Chippewa Falls. That is, if all the right equipment gets here, and while some of the equipment came yesterday, I'm still missing a box of something that somebody was supposed to send to me, and I can't wait to get in touch with this person and go, where's my stuff? But on a completely unrelated note, Luke Mathers is here, and he's going to tell us.
Completely unrelated note. Are you sure, Pat? Completely unrelated.
Well, okay, maybe not completely. Hey, Luke, where's my stuff?
You got to ask, I don't know if it's Louis DeJoy or if it's who's running the show over at the U.S. Postal Service, but I had the package sent and it should be there. It was said by Monday night.
I'm going to be at the Chippewa Falls post office in a matter of minutes, and I'm sure it'll be there. And then by the time Kristen and Kirk get here later in the day, they'll see me, you know, swearing and connecting cables, and I'll probably have to pull you off of dueling tangents, you know, just to help me with technical matters, but we'll get it.
Yeah. Boys, it's all going to be fine.
You can call in on air. I've done technical, you know, support over the airwaves here.
How funny would that be if we all gave our technical advice on air? I mean, we start taking, you know, gyno talk for Kristen, and
yes,
you know,
everybody
specializes in something here.
Did you see the New York Times headline yesterday? New York Times, 50% of the people in the world have a clitoris, so why don't we study it? I was like, yes, did you just put the word clitoris in a headline?
I have to tell you that I was out to dinner last night with my stepmom and my wife, and I stopped. They were talking. I said, stop for a minute. I said, my phone brings up breaking news headlines from the New York Times, and occasionally it's not breaking news. It's just some story they want to push through, and I showed them that headline. And of course, they just, you know, they lost it right there in the restaurant. That things you don't really expect to show up on your lock screen on your phone. But
those of you who can't see what's happening right now on Facebook, Luke just took a few moments to put his head between his legs and take a few breaths.
It's false. Go to the Facebook feed and you will see that was false.
So maybe we'll talk about that tomorrow, since Kristen's going to be with us for 3 hours again tomorrow. We're going to put you on the payroll here pretty soon.
Excellent.
But Luke is on payroll and is getting paid to promote the other, wait a minute, wait for it. I got to get Aaron to be ready here for the other fine shows on this network of Civic Media. Luke.
Oh, I was waiting for Aaron. I was giving.
Oh, no.
Come on, Aaron. Come on. Yes, we do have some excellent shows to promote this afternoon and throughout the rest of this morning. Good morning, Dr. Lyerly. By the way, I did not get to say that earlier.
Good morning.
But following this fine program that you are putting together here on Civic Media, Pat, Kristen Bry is going to be hosting As Goes Wisconsin, and she's got a conversation she wants to have about the budget surplus. So those numbers projected for the end of this fiscal year, originally supposed to be $3.4 billion, now up to $4.3 billion. So Kristen's going to be discussing that. She's also going to have on Deborah Davis, the Wisconsin Assembly candidate for District 82, and Josh Burstein, who is saving the world with comedy and recently featured on Wheel of Fortune. So Kristen shared that on her personal Facebook. It was a reel yesterday as she was watching Pat Sajak host Wheel of Fortune. Josh was one of the contestants. And so he's going to be joining Kristen this afternoon at 1 p.m. Okay. Then on Bull Falls Radio with the Chad Holmes Show this afternoon from 2 to 4 p.m. Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes will be stopping by and talking to Chad at 2:15. And Jesse Apoyan will be speaking with Chad at 3. So a full show for the Chad Holmes show on Bull Falls Radio this afternoon. Really excited for that. Unfortunately, Dan Schaefer is going to be previously engaged this afternoon. So he's going to be rescheduling Dueling Tangents, but we're going to find something to talk about regardless. There's plenty of recombobulation that can still be done, talking about the articles that Dan's put out over the last week since we've had a very busy week in Wisconsin politics. And then Dane County Judge Everett Mitchell will be joining the Devil's Advocates this afternoon at 4:30.
Because he's a candidate for Supreme Court.
He is.
Have you met him?
I have not met him yet, no.
I met him. He's a former preacher. He is a preacher, and he is dynamic and exciting, and his backstory is so compelling. Just wait.
He is one of two progressive candidates in the race so far for state Supreme Court, along with Dan Kelly, the conservative former justice who was unseated in 2019?
20, I believe. 20,
By Jill Karofsky.
2020, spring of 2020.
That's right.
When COVID and first started.
He's running to get back on the court for a seat that conservative justice Patience Rogensack is retiring from. And that race in April will decide if the court stays 4-3 conservative or flips 4-3 progressive. So I don't think anybody is necessarily tuning in to this program who has election fatigue. And if you do, you're going to have to get over it because we're jumping right in to that February primary and in that April election for the state Supreme Court. So thank you, Luke, for letting us know one of the candidates will be on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a full day of programming here at Civic Media across the network.
And getting back to supper clubs, just down the road from you, Luke, was it called Smokies?
Yes. Smokies. Yes. Yep. Right on University Avenue.
Yeah. And it closed recently. And so that was, another loss of a classic supper club, though in Madison, you still have the Tornado Room, which is, where I'm hoping to get to in a couple of weeks here when I get back down there. And I didn't want to make Ron uncomfortable telling my one supper club story because it's a little tongue in cheek, but maybe not really. We used to have a favorite supper club just east of Cornell. And it was at the time it was called Handy's, and it's gone through a couple of name changes and ownership changes since then, but it was so worth the drive. And we could never figure out why their steaks were so good other than that the cook, and I don't know if this was Handy himself or whatever, but every so often he'd step out of the kitchen and he'd be dressed all in whites, kitchen whites, and his front was just, smeared with, black and red from juices and everything else. But the thing is, he always had the chomped bit of a cigar in his mouth as he'd step out of the kitchen. And so we were convinced that was the secret, was those cigar ashes, along with anything else on the grill, was what made those steaks taste so good. Hey, whatever it takes.
It was the smoke from the cigar, maybe.
Maybe the original smoked meats, from that. So anyway, I say all this to say, there are still some great places to get to them. And yes, Luke and Aaron, we are definitely going to do a Tornado Room reunion whenever we can get me and Kristen and Kirk all down there at the same time as well. So thank you so much for everything today. Aaron, you're muted. Say it one more time.
He's looking forward to it is what Aaron's saying.
I read his lips that way too. Kristen, see you tonight and then back here tomorrow morning.
Oh, we are going to have so much fun. We're having a sleepover at the Kreitlows.
Chaos will reign. You're going to want to be here right at 8:06 tomorrow morning for that one. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you Wednesday, we hope.
Bye-bye.